Okay. The time is 9:04 a.m. on January 13th, 2021, and I am convening this video conference meeting of the Personnel Committee of the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association. This meeting is being conducted pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act, Governor Abbott's suspension of certain Open Meeting Act requirements due to the COVID-19 pandemic and the association's antitrust policy. All information disclosed or discussed is to be used only for carrying out the business of the association. Proper notice of the meeting was filed on January 4th, 2021 and published in the Texas Register in accordance with the Texas Open Meetings Act. A copy of the notice should be attached to the summary of the official minutes of this meeting. A quorum is achieved as all three members of the committee are in attendance. Also in attendance are Board Counsel Shelby Bates, General Counsel Jackie Risen, Executive Director Bart Bowles, Association Employees Jarrett Terry and Topping Hart Haggerty, and Texas Department of Insurance Representatives John Peters, Tina Arendall, James Kennedy, Brian Rewey, and Patty Otto. Has John Alexander joined yet? Not that we know of.
He's not going to be joining, and I don't know if James has joined yet.
James, that's who I was missing. Okay.
Yes.
So, all right. So, we'll move over now to the agenda. First item on the agenda this morning is consideration and possible action on consent agenda item summary of the official minutes of the October 7th, 2020 meeting. I see that there's a recommendation from Bart that we take action on this item. Is that just the approval, Bart, or something else?
Just the approval, unless there are any revisions to the minutes.
All right, committee members, have a chance to review it, and can we get a motion to approve the summary and official minutes?
I move for approval.
Second, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Motion approved. Okay, next on the agenda, we have consideration and possible action on the benefits, compensation, and training component in the 2021 operating budget. First on the agenda is the employee compensation. We'll talk more about that in specific details in the executive session, but here we have recommended changes to the non-salary benefits to the employees, starting first with the health and dental insurance plans. Bart, did you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I'll just mention where we are quickly. The health insurance plan, what's shown here and the costs that are reflected is the renewal of our health insurance plan with Blue Cross Blue Shield. The dental plan, the long-term disability, term life, AD&D were changed after review with the personnel committee in July. And as of October 1st, those coverages are now provided by Lincoln Financial. And a little better rates, and we like keeping those all with one coverage. So when we get to the end of reviewing these non-salary benefits, you will see the budget numbers. But first, any questions on the insurance coverages?
No questions.
Yeah, no questions.
Okay. The 401k and the 457 have not changed. It's the same structure we've had. So I just use those on here. The accrual of vacation, personal, and sick leave. The only thing that's changed there, and it was the accrual and carryover of sick leave. It's now unlimited based on the last approval or last change recommended by the personnel committee adopted by the board. And for year-end 2020 only, the carryover on vacation leave was increased to 80 hours. Okay. There have been no change in the paid holidays. The parking that we've added to the budget continues at, for each employee, it's $215 per space per month through May. But with the relocation of the offices that we're close to finalizing that will begin June 1, that parking will reduce to $155 per employee per month. And the health reimbursement arrangement right now in the budget does not reflect any change. Agenda item three, we will be talking about the HRA a little bit more in detail in response to a request for some analysis from the committee. What you see here on the bottom of 2-3 is a comparison of the 2020 budgeted amounts and the 2021 budget, proposed budget that will be provided for consideration to the board on January 26th. And you can see there is a whopping $44 change in the annual budget amounts for these items. Not very much at all. The rest of the budget, salaries, payroll taxes, and education and training. Education and training is reduced, although we are going to do a little additional training. Education and training is reduced because of the travel component. And so we are anticipating doing a little bit more education and training, but it's going to be done at a reduced cost because it's going to be all virtual. And those are all the elements in the budget for compensation and benefits, Madam Chair.
Okay, great. So do we need to take any action on any of these things? I mean, this is just reporting, right?
This is reporting. These reflect actions you've previously taken, and we've now implemented and incorporated them into the proposed budget.
Great. Okay. All right, then. Moving right along.
Excuse me, Bart and Robin, can I interject one thing? As you know, these recordings are our official minutes, and I think everyone on the committee knows the voices of other people, but on the first agenda item, can we just clarify, I believe it was David Summers
who David Summer moved.
And James Huckabee seconded.
Correct.
And just, I think, a reminder, these are the official minutes, and so let's try to be careful about identifying who moves, who seconds.
Okay.
Thank you, Shelby. I will add to that. Sometimes we don't make it very clear when we talk about the minutes that we include in written form for the committee to review. That's a summary of the official minutes. The official minutes are the recordings. And under the Open Meetings Act, that meetings that are conducted by video conference, our recordings are posted after the meeting to the association's website. So we're very careful that we make sure we try to get a very clear recording and post it as promptly as possible. And thank you, Shelby, for that update.
All right, so moving on to item three, consideration and possible action on adjustments to the association's health reimbursement arrangement. Bart, you want to tell us about that?
Yes, the committee asked, let me get to my notes here, asked me to follow up on three elements here. If there should be any adjustment to one, the $1,500 annual amount of HRA provided to each employee. Also look at the year-end carryover amount that each employee can carry over from one calendar year to another, and then the maximum amount that can be accrued. So I looked at each one of those and also reached out to our consultant that helps us with our health insurance and benefits, and I've not heard back from her. But in my research and comparing to our current health insurance plan, you know, our deductible is still $1,500 on a high deductible plan. So I feel that the $1,500 annual amount is appropriate. Our out-of-pocket maximums, if I can get to it here, excuse me, are $6,000. Now we have an accumulation amount right now that from year to year, an employee can take 50% of the amount from that year that they were provided as an HRA. If it's unused, can carry over to the next year. So they can carry over $750 from each year to the next. and that can continue to accumulate until it reaches $4,500, and then the accumulation is capped. So I looked at all of that, and even though you might think that it would be good to take the accumulation to the $6,000 out-of-pocket max that is in our health insurance plan, I truly don't think that's necessary for a couple of different reasons. One of those is if the accumulation for any employee exceeds $5,000, under the Medicare, Medicaid, and SCHIP Extension Act of 2007, the association as the employer would have some additional reporting responsibilities. And it's considerably complicated, but it's just another element that seems unnecessary. And no employee has expressed a concern with that $4,500 accumulation amount. So without any additional feedback from our consultant on this and just my research, I'm not recommending any change, but I'd ask the committee for their feedback.
Bart, can I throw in one more thing?
Please, Jared.
Also, if you exceed the $5,000, that amount starts becoming taxable to the employee as well.
Good point. Thank you.
Thank you for outlining everything for us. If you're happy with it, it certainly seems reasonable and fair, and I'm happy with it too. So we'll hear from the members of the committee on their opinion.
It's James Huckabee. I think it's appropriate, and I am in favor of what's outlined as far as the overview on page 3.1.
David Summer, I concur with that.
Okay. All right.
So then we'll make no change.
Good. All right. So item 4, consideration and possible action on the association's compensation policy. Bart?
Yes. In the compensation study that the committee led the development that was conducted this year, the Clifton Larson Allen individual or professional that provided that referenced a compensation philosophy several times within the document and said that an organization should have a compensation philosophy. So I contacted Nikki Milhop of CLA that did the report and talked with her some via email about the elements that would be necessary to have an effective compensation philosophy. And you can see some questions here on the screen that she provided to me. It's a quality test that any compensation philosophy should pass. I then did some research on the internet and came up with several different draft compensation philosophies for different organizations, plus a couple of blank ones, and pulled bits and pieces from different ones together to what would make sense and what fit the structure of the association. I then took that compensation philosophy and sent it back to Nikki Milhop and asked her for some feedback. I'll bring it up on the screen and point to at least one item that she had a comment that I did not incorporate. Let me go to... Okay, here in this first full paragraph on this page, you'll see that the compensation program includes periodic adjustments to salary ranges based on market changes. And the market change here, when we go to the market to actually say, how do we compare for these responsibilities, duties, for each of these job descriptions, that's done through a compensation study. And I put in here, we do that every 5 to 8 years. It's roughly been done every 8 years, 2004, 2012, and 2020. And then between going to the market through a study with a compensation consultant, you'll see in this paragraph, in the interim period between studies, I have used the cost of living adjustments from the Social Security Administration to move the salary ranges. This is not change compensation. It's just to change the salary ranges for each position. So I move the midpoint and make sure we have that the low of the salary range, the minimum 75% below the midpoint, and the maximum's at 125. One thing Nikki had mentioned was rather than use the cost of living Social Security Administration for an adjustment, that we could use a percentage slightly lower than the association's merit-based budget. Well, for this and that might work for organizations with a lot more employees. This organization, we don't use a merit-based budget. So I wanted to have some way to adjust salary ranges annually to keep them somewhat current. And I wanted it to have something not speculative, but quantifiable. So I am very comfortable using the COLA from the Social Security Administration. So that's the one comment that I received from our consultant that I did not incorporate into this philosophy. So wanted to make that comment, and then I'll leave it for the committee to ask questions or ask me to make any additional revisions to this philosophy.
I don't have any recommendations on the philosophy, but I think it's a good, sound, fair process that we have for, you know, monitoring and adjusting salaries as necessary.
David Summer, I don't have any questions. I think it's a good philosophy.
James Huckerman, I also echo the comments made by Robert and David.
So we need a resolution now that that we take this to the board, or so the committee recommends that we present it to the board at the meeting next week for adoption.
There's a resolution, I believe, James Huckabee, on 4.5. Is that correct?
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So resolve that the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association adopts the compensation philosophy as recommended by the Personnel Committee. So we're going to present that to the board next week?
On the 26th.
Okay. All right.
David Summer, I move that resolution.
James Huckabee, second.
Okay. So moved. We'll present that to the board next week for their consideration on adopting the compensation philosophy.
Thank you.
All right, moving on to item 5, consideration and possible action on the annual performance evaluation of the executive director. So Bart, did you want to discuss this?
Yeah, I think we need to introduce it here. Of course, there are going to be elements that will be available to the committee to discuss in executive session. But for the record, the executive employment deferred compensation contract the association has with me does require the personnel committee to review the annual performance evaluation that's done of my performance by all the directors. And board counsel Shelby Betts assembles a compilation and shares that with the committee and did share that with me as well. I believe it was distributed confidentially to all the committee members. We'll, of course, leave the discussion of specific elements of that for executive session, but I just want to confirm that all committee members did have an opportunity to review that compilation.
Yes, we did.
Okay. So we can reserve further discussion of that item in executive session. And in executive session, you can do both a discussion of that and elements of that compilation with me present. And then I can be removed to a waiting room, let you talk among yourselves as well.
Okay. Okay, so moving on to item six, consideration and possible action on various elements of the executive employment and deferred compensation contract for the executive director. So other employment and activities engaged in by the executive director, Bart?
Yes, again, the executive employment deferred compensation contract does require disclosure of any engagement with any trade or other entity that requires more than 15 hours a month of my time to be disclosed to the committee. I have no engagement like that present. There are a couple of vacancies on executive director positions around the country that have been advertised. I did not submit anything to be considered for those positions on a contract basis. We have enough work right now going on in Texas, and that's my primary responsibility, and I'm not going to do anything else. I am preparing an additional element that I'm going to distribute to some guarantee associations as part of succession planning. A lot of guarantee associations, and we've done some focus on this recently, and I presented to all the guarantee associations on business continuity and succession planning at the most recent educational seminar hosted by NOLGA. But in succession planning, many guarantee associations are getting very exercised about making sure they have a good succession plan in place, because we've had, I believe, 18 administrators in the last 2 years change on the Life Health Guarantee Association side. The key there is finding a proper replacement, but also making sure that there's good documentation or processes, location of resources and information like that. What I am going to offer to a number of the Guarantee Association is an interim measure that between the time when an exec director may leave, if it's not planned and orderly done, but it's somewhat of an emergency or an accident, heaven forbid, should occur, that while they are conducting their succession planning, that they have an existing arrangement in place with me to provide for interim management and continuation of their operations. I'm very well plugged into almost every task force and committee and insolvency task force at NOLGA. And so long as I am provided with some background information about their operational structure, bank accounts, funding, things like that, I can make sure that their activities continue, the benefits get paid seamlessly while they find a long-term executive director. So that's a service I would like to offer to some of the other guarantee associations. It would not take a lot of time from my duties on for the Life and Health Guarantee Association here in Texas, unless triggered. So the preparatory work would just be understanding and documenting their structures. But then if triggered, it would require some time. But before I offer that to any guarantee association, I wanted to ask the committee if they had any concerns with me moving forward with that offering.
I personally don't have any concerns. I know that whenever we're working on an insolvency, a lot of what you do for us could, you know, is also the exact same thing you'd be doing for another guarantee association in regard to that same insolvency. I don't think it's would I don't think you would ever let it interfere with your duties here. So I don't have any concerns.
Would there be a possibility in theory that you could end up having more than one of these to handle at one time?
In theory, there could be. If you look at the duties going on, as far as just monitoring what's going on in insolvencies and keeping the board of directors advised, there's a significant amount of overlap. There could be a volume if there's a significant number of disbursements to be made, either on operational cost, on funding benefits to claimants. So that could occur. It's somewhat unlikely that you'd have a number of vacancies, but it could occur. But I don't know another way to manage that. And I don't know if this, and I have drafted an emergency services contract, and it's not with me personally, it's with my firm. I have a firm on the side called Bowles Administration and Management Services that I created a number of years ago. It may not be something administrators and boards and other guarantee associations are interested in, but I've had at least two or three approach me to say, what do I do? I've had one chairman and another guarantee association say, this keeps him awake at night. What happens if my administrator gets run over by a bus? He says, I can't run the guarantee association. What happens? So there may be a need, but David, I have the answer to say it could happen, but I would think it would be unlikely there'd be multiple occasions simultaneously.
This is James Huckabee. I have no concerns. And the thing that I'm glad we did a few years ago, and Bart's informant agreement, we did have discussion. We did write that into the informant agreement under the section of additional employment. So I think we covered that. So definitely, I think the other thing that was addressed under other employment of the employee, I think we adequately addressed that. One of the things that was addressed about who would be notified, I know prior to this employment agreement, I believe it was the board would notify the chair, board chair, but the way this agreement is written, it protects the organization. And so as long as we follow this contract that we have with him, I have no concern. Definitely, I don't think he would overload himself, but we do have an employment contract that it gives permission to do this, and that there are conditions established that protects both parties.
And Jane, you're right. The contract does require, it states, before applying for or receiving any other gainful employment or participating activities in names organizations that will require at least an average of 15 hours employees' time per month, that I advise all members of the board and obtain the approval of the executive committee. I don't right now foresee that this would be more than 15 hours per month, but I haven't even made that offer yet. But this is a little bit beyond the contract. I wanted to first explore with the personnel committee if this created any concern. Because honestly, this is not something I feel personally that I need to do. It's more that the system has a hole in it. And I've been approached to help fill that hole, to fill a gap on an interim basis if needed.
Art, this is Jackie. One of the things that I think you might keep in mind as well is the kind of resources that you would be using if you were to perform these services. Because we've got in various places we have language about guarantee association resources, such right. as computer stuff is only used for the guarantee association work.
And I'll disclose that in making these offerings and in discussing this, at least with one association, as I mentioned, their chair approached me in drafting the agreement that I have, it would be using my personal resources. And I do have a separate CPA available to help provide accounting services should they need that. It just so happens she lives with me. So there'd be separation. So no association resources or association staff would be used to support those activities.
And any arrangement or contract you would have with third parties, you need to include a provision that there won't be any conflict of interest between that other entity, organization, person, and the Texas Association.
Yes.
But I think the main concern initially of the board was simply, hey, we don't want to let, you know, we want the executive director concentrating, focusing on the Texas Association. And the issue was too much time being diverted to other things. And that does not seem to be the case based on what you just said.
I will tell you that I have provided a lot of support and resources and documentation and a lot of phone calls with a number of the new administrators that have been engaged over the last 2 years. I've gotten a lot of calls. How do I do this? Where do I look? Do you have a sample I can work from? So it's been more or less voluntary and pro bono. It has not taken a lot of time, but I've already been doing some of this. That may be what was the nexus behind being approached to, can we formalize something? So, but I appreciate you the opportunity to let me describe this to you. I will keep the committee and the board apprised if it moves further. The other elements here, so that's the employment component. There's a couple other reporting matters that I'll go ahead and handle in open session, if you don't mind, Madam Chair. Okay. The EEDCC also includes a cost of living adjustment, and the adjustment for calendar year 2021, which is the fourth year of the contract. I included here on six, I'll move to it, 6-4, the news release from the Social Security Administration. The cost of living adjustment for 2021 is 1.3%. So in accordance with the contract, that adjustment to my compensation was implemented on January 1st. And so this is just a reporting item that this was done. As customary, I did send a notification to the Personnel Committee Chair, Robin Vincent, to advise her that this would be going on. And so that's the COLA adjustment. The second item under the EEDCC is a longevity incentive payment. Part of the contract, my contract, there are three of these. The first in 2020, and I've included the paragraph from the EEDCC for you to review. But that payment was disclosed, or the eligibility of that payment disclosed to the Personnel Committee via email in December. I'm sorry, I actually did that in November. And that the requirements for that payment, I believe, had been met. I think the committee discussed it. And after receiving the confirmation, that payment was made to me on December 9th in accordance with the contract. So the last element of the EEDCC has to do with a 457B payment. That contract provides has a table for a payment to be made each year of $18,500 in January of each calendar year. But there is a discretionary element that the board of directors can make an additional amount add to that payment up to the maximum amount permitted by the Internal Revenue Service. So we will be discussing this, I believe, Robin, in executive session. I'll just go ahead and disclose that the maximum amount for 2021 was not increased. It remains at $19,500. So we'll leave further discussion of that for you to undertake in executive session.
Okay. Okay. Moving on to item 7, consideration and possible action regarding conducting a request for proposal to engage an employment council.
Madam Chair, this item, we'll need to have some discussion in executive session, because all staffing discussion and personnel matters, because this is a long-range staffing plan. And I have identified the potential to make some adjustments in our long-range plans. And to do that, I would like to review those plans first with the committee and the board. And if they feel that the direction I'm going to be recommending is appropriate, I would like to engage an employment council to make sure it's done by the proper means. There are a number of employment law aspects. We just need to dot the I's and cross the T's and do this appropriately to protect the association and protect the employees, to make sure anything that we do according to employment law. So I would prefer not to discuss the details of that plan in open session, that we save that for executive session. But the committee will have some discretion. Should you agree that and move forward and recommend this plan to the board, I am adamant that we should do an RFP, but there are some procedural steps on after proposals, should we move forward with this, are received in response to the RFP. How do we then determine and move forward with an engagement? And that's not confidential. That can be done either have another personnel committee meeting, and then have a board meeting, or just have a board meeting, because I don't know, there'd be a lot the personnel committee would have to discuss that the board would not also want to discuss, or have the board, when they approve the RFP, to have the selection of an engagement of an employment council, to give me the authority to do that in consultation with the personnel committee chair and the board chair. I mentioned those options because I anticipate, should we move forward with this, that engagement would not be a large engagement. I'm anticipating that some of the counsel that we'll be seeking would be fairly straightforward and common for an employment lawyer. I don't see a lot of hours committed to this, and therefore a lot of cost. So I'm trying to keep the entire process as simple as possible, but still honor the RFP process. So we can talk about that more in detail, and it might make more sense with the perspective of my long-range staffing plan.
Okay.
And I need to confirm, did all the directors have an opportunity? I sent the that RFP confidentially. Did you have the opportunity to take a look at that?
I didn't look at it, I'll be honest.
I can talk you through it if we need to and we get there. It's pretty straightforward.
Okay. Okay. So do we want to move into executive session now or skip over this and come back?
What else do we have that we can handle before? It doesn't matter to me, before executive session. Is there any items to, we're on item number 8.
Yeah.
If I may, Robin and James, okay. I'm glad you mentioned this. I had some second thoughts on the order of the agenda after I finalized it. There are only 2 items after executive session that would need to be addressed. And of course, including you have to, any actions you recommend in executive session, I'll have to take action in open session. But after that, we have the second draft of the remote working policy to consider and your annual review of your charter.
Okay.
We can do those after executive session, or you could take them out of order and do them now. So the only thing you'd have to do after executive session is to take action on matters from executive session.
James or David, do you have a preference?
My preference will be to move out of order and take care of those 2 items before executive session.
I agree.
Fine with that.
Okay, so that would be item 10 on the remote working policy, Madam Chair. Would you like to take that one up?
Yes, please.
In your July 20th meeting, you asked that I draft a remote working policy. And although we have some guidelines and procedures we've been following that were previously drafted and included in the business continuity plan, when COVID-19 pandemic rose up and we closed the association's offices March 13th, we've been following some remote working practices. You requested that I formalize those a little bit more. So the first draft was presented to you October 7th, and there were some suggestions from the committee to add some additional language. I redrafted that policy. I shared it with Board Counsel Betts and General Counsel Rickson, and the black line that was included in the materials that I've now put up on screen reflects revisions from the first draft, items that I reviewed, plus items adjusted by both Jackie Rickson and Shelby Betts. So there is a red line was included in the materials and a clean version. So I don't know if you want to walk through this or just tell me if there are specific sections where you have questions. And Robin, I will point out a couple of things, if it could. There were some clarifications about supplies and how expenses and the employees and expenses for supplies and things will be covered. We added some language to protect the association and its property. Should any of the property be damaged or stolen, who has responsibility there, compliance with OSHA. We even added some elements about how the remote working location can and cannot be used for conducting the association's business. Some language about insurance coverages to coordinate to make sure what was included or not included with the insurance coverages. And actually, Jarrett and I had a conversation with our broker to make sure the protections we're talking that are still included here, that there are those protections for the employees in their remote working location. We confirmed that. There's a weapons section that's necessary because of the state we live in. And I think those are the primary changes. But these were some of the elements that the committee asked we clarify. And Shelby, you and Jackie, you both had a hand in this. Is there anything you would like to add?
This is Shelby. I worked on a remote working policy for the Property and Casualty Insurance Guarantee Association and on this one. And I think this is a really good, comprehensive remote working policy. If I were a director, I would vote for it.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it addresses every concern that every one of us had pointed out in the past and then some. And I can't think of anything else that could possibly come up that we haven't already addressed here to protect not only the association, but our employees as well.
This is Jackie. I don't have anything else to add either. I think this is a good document.
It's James Huckabee. I echo Robin's and Jackie's and Shelley's comments. It's a great document.
David Summer, I agree. Good document.
Okay. So we have a resolution on this remote working policy. So resolved that the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association amends the association's employee handbook to include the remote working policy as recommended by its personnel committee. Do we have a motion?
So move, David Summer.
Second, James Huckabee.
All right, so motion carries.
Thank you.
All right then. So now we're gonna move on to item 11, consideration and possible action regarding the committee's charter.
In here on page 11.1, what I've got on the screen just kind of recaps when the charter has been changed. 2011, just when the legislature changed the name of the association to shorten it. 2016, clarified the role of the committee in the my annual evaluation. And then in 2018, just some timing adjustments in the evaluation, when my evaluation would be conducted, so they would coincide with the evaluations that I do for all the association staff. I've gone back through the committee charter as it stands today, and I did not see anything that I think warrants revision, but of course it's up to the committee. I'd also comment that the committee fully complies and is currently in compliance with this charter, following all of the prescribed actions and responsibilities.
Okay, well, I don't think any action is necessary. Other committee members, how do you feel?
It's James Huckabee. I'm also in agreement.
David Summer, fine with it as it is.
Okay.
So those were the only other items, Madam Chair, other than those that we've left to discuss in executive session.
Okay, then. So do we want to recess the regular session now in preparation for the executive session? Is everybody ready? Topping?
Madam Chair, could we have a short restroom break right before the executive session?
Okay.
All I need is then the out language before the executive session, and then we'll wait to start executive session when everybody's back.
Okay. So the time is 9:51 a.m. on January 13th, 2021, and I am recessing the regular session of the Personnel Committee meeting of the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association in order for the committee to meet in executive session pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act. So we will reconvene. Is 10 minutes good for everybody? We can reconvene at 10 o'clock.
Okay, we will leave this session of Zoom open.
Yes.
And as you rejoin at 10 o'clock, Topping will announce when she's ready.
Okay. I'm stopping this public session. We are recording in public session.
Okay. The time is 11:17 a.m. on January 13th, 2021. The executive session of the Personnel Committee meeting of the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association has concluded, and I am reconvening the regular session pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act. So in executive session, we talked about the items that were on the agenda there, such as the discretionary compensation element of the executive director, and there will be we will be making an adjustment with regard to that at the board meeting next week. And we also discussed the executive director's performance evaluation, but no action required on that.
Okay. Then there's a resolution here. I made some adjustments to the resolution that had been provided to the committee. Let you read this on Employment Council, a little bit different.
Okay. So Personnel Committee recommends the following resolution be presented to
the director. Bart, you'll change the title, resolution.
I will change the title when I prepare it for the board. But this was just quickly to get the language in front of the committee.
Okay, so a resolution on an RFP for Employment Council. We'll be making a recommendation to authorize the executive director to assemble competitive proposals for the engagement of an Employment Council to assist long-range staffing plans. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
That's
second. David Summer.
Okay, so moved. All right. I think we have one item left on the agenda for the committee meeting today, and that's consideration and possible action regarding the committee's 2021 calendar of events and the next meeting date. So the next committee meeting is scheduled for Monday, July 12th, 2021. Did we say we might have a reason that we might have to have another one in the meantime to discuss the results of the employment? What am I looking for?
Well, the proposals that come in for engagement.
Yes, the engagement of an employment council. Do we need to have, is it possible we're going to need to have another personnel committee before July 12th?
I had discussed the process a little bit with Chair Lewis, and he would like the board to talk about, will there be the need for the personnel committee to review those, or the entire board? Would he want the entire board to review them? Or if we could give if the board wants to give enough parameters where they would authorize me to engage the council from one of the proposals that's been submitted, but only after consultation with the personnel committee chair and the board chair.
Oh, okay.
So he wanted those options for the process to be presented at the board meeting, and we make that decision there. That's all right with you?
Yes.
That's fine with me. Any other discussions or anything else before we adjourn this personnel committee meeting this morning?
The resolution 6.6, we will, I agree. We agree with it. Do we need to vote on the language of that on page 6.6? I'm in agreement with it. I was just asking the.
I can put it on screen real quick, and we can see it. This resolution, Jim.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I believe in the past the committee has recommended this and filled in the blank. Okay. That way, I can have a resolution ready to present to the board. Now, your rationale, discussion, or anything you like want to have, you can have that confidentially with the board. But this would be passed out, or in this situation, displayed for the board at the meeting.
My only comment on this, Jim, and board, on that last in the resolved deferred compensation contract during 2020, and it ends there with no. In further reserve. Never mind.
Resolved,
okay.
Bart, I don't know that the amount needs to be disclosed. This is the salary of a specific person. I think the resolution can be that the personnel committee is going to recommend to the board that an adjustment that is discretionary in nature be made to your compensation in accordance with the applicable employment agreement.
Yeah, the committee, as Robin stated, can just make their recommendation to the board on the 26th. And you do not need to adopt this resolution now.
Okay. So we're done?
Yes.
Believe so.
All right, then. We will now adjourn the meeting. So the time is 11:23 a.m. on January 13th, 2021, and this meeting of the Personnel Committee of the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association that has been held pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act is adjourned.